This is a high school medical physics exam tutorial with Peter Hill Explains, where we have a conversation about things scientific. It's not where I lecture to you, I just discuss a few things. You might understand a few things, research a few things, and just generally advance science. Now, there's a new structure to this all, where I give a general idea of the questions, a general lecture, a talk, then go off. And if I've got it here, go through the formula sheet. I've got the formula sheet here. Then the questions fully, then try and answer them, and then read the official answers. It gets us back here. So the general idea, general topics we're going to cover is an endoscope used to look and actually manipulate inside the body. So you can have little robot tweezers at the end of an endoscope. And the second part is an MRI machine. How does that work? How does it see grey matter? What do you do to see grey matter in your brain? And can you talk a bit about resonance? It's an MRI machine, resonant machine. How is it resonating? So let's go in the first section now. I've briefly described it. Let's talk about the actual detailed talk about what an endoscope is. So an endoscope is essentially a microscope inspection machine which uses optical fibers so you can see as if from the end of the pipe involved. So it has a light, several light pipes. So you've got a light source, and you've got fibers from that light source, and the optical fibers transmit the light by a process of internal reflection. They have a cladding which is of low refractive index, a core which is high refractive index, and a sequence of a thing called total internal reflection, which means that the light is completely reflected as it bounces around the inside. Now, this is true for these large core optical fibers. And in general, it takes a geometrical angle and position from your light source and rearranges it as it goes in. So it takes generally a square input and translate that into a ring input. Pointing in towards your section that you're looking at. You'll then have a section of the inside of your throat or your body illuminated, and a lens held back from that, and that will be imaged onto a ordered fibre array, and such that that ordered fibre array will transmit or carry the light, maintaining the geometrical image information of the image, the intensity and position of every piece of light, and transporting that up or translating it out of the patient, out of the body, close to a camera or other devices which will then measure it. So the important thing is the outwards going fibre array maintains the geometric integrity. So if you've got a square at the start, you'll have a square at the end in positioning. So you'll have essentially an integrated light, amount of light going to each optical fibre, and that amount of light will be maintained at the end. It's a light guide. There are other aspects, things that you can have in there. One is air, water. You can introduce these two things. You may want to irrigate an area to look at it, look at an area. You can also have wire. Controlled little tweezers. They're not quite like robots, they're like puppet strings that you go through, which allows you to snip, burn, cauterize, so you can actually have something which heats up, holds and removes the tissue sample, and you can actually withdraw that tissue sample down a delivery tube. So you can have a tube there, and up that tube put a small pair of tweezers or whatever to be taking it down, or the pair of tweezers can deliver it to a delivery sample, so you can keep it in there and keep on removing samples. You don't have to take the endoscope in and out all the time for all these different samples. Since that's an endoscope, it allows you to enter and get a view and manipulate through a small hole in the body. So that's like the poor man's robotic surgery. Now we go on to magnetic resonance imaging. Magnetic resonance imaging produces a 3D, three-dimensional image of the body by making your body resonate and produce radio waves. You convert your body into something which can create radio waves by having a very strong magnetic field. And with a strong magnetic field, you means that the residual magnetic field of an odd number of nuclei will align to it. Let's stop the odd number of nuclei. There's an intimate relationship between spin, angular momentum, and magnetic moment. So magnetic moment is another term for the strength of a magnet. And when the magnet is how much a magnet will want to turn to align to a field. Now, spin is a quantum mechanical concept. It doesn't relate to physical spinning. So your proton isn't physically spinning. It has a universal state of spin a half or minus a half, whether it is aligned to or against the magnetic field. And it will align to any magnetic field and always be aligned to magnetic fields. So the weakest ones, when there's weak, non-aligned magnetic fields, your protons will have general directions pointing with that magnetic field. Now it has two. It's quantum mechanical. It is quantized, so it is impossible to actually ever bend the axis of spin into anything except plus a half or minus a half. Now the spin will be not direct to the magnetic field, but will process around the magnetic field because it is behaving as if it's got angular momentum. Angular momentum has the units of kilograms, meters squared, seconds to the minus one, kg, m, s to the minus one is momentum times m again is angular momentum. That's the definition of angular momentum. You'll have a population, an energy level within a tense magnetic field. And there's one thing is that orientation will process with a frequency called the Lamor frequency. So there's a natural precession frequency which binds up energy, angular momentum, determines the frequency. And there's energy levels. Now, thermally, there will be a population at the lower energy level, which is aligned, or the upper energy level, which is not aligned, and the actual separation of those energy levels will be proportional to the magnetic field. And it is also, in terms of energy, H mu, proportional to a photon of radio frequency light equal to the Lamor frequency. Now, in terms of imaging, you have gradients and frequency sweeping such that you can create a gradient and sweep the frequency and take effectively a slice or multiple slices with a broad range excitation and a broad range angular antenna receiving. Now, there's two aspects to it. One is the natural population. Thermally, there'll be a higher population in the lowest state and a lower population in the higher state. So most of the nucleons, protons will be aligned to the field. There'll be a few not aligned, and that will be determined by thermal effects. Now, if you are to have a process which flips the field, we'll talk in a little while, they will stay flipped. They won't spontaneously decay because there is the formula for spontaneous emission, which is mu to the 3 or frequency cubed or lambda to the 5th. It means that there's virtually no spontaneous emission of these particles. So the emission process is not like that. However, a spinning charge or a spinning magnet will radiate out energy, but if There's a whole heap of spinning magnets all spinning randomly at random phases. There'll be no net radiation, no net energy loss. It's some, one of those things to get your head around with again, with quantum mechanics. Now, the important thing is that a radio frequency will deposit equally energy photons, correction, spin protons from the lower state, which is spin up or spin aligned, to the upper state, and equally so, that same amount of energy will actually translate things from the upper state to the lower state. So the important thing is that there's two important things. One is that you're quantum mechanically, you're not allowed to have a spin 90 degrees to the axis. Also, quantum mechanically, as you excite this, you will get a spin, you'll get an even population, saturated absorption. And saturated absorption means it's not that there's all in the upper state, which is spin down, counter-aligned. There'll be actually be 50% lined up and 50% lined down because of the two Einstein equations, for one for absorption, the other for stimulated emission. So what actually happens is that the rate of absorption increases until it's equal to the rate of stimulated emission of your two states, and you get 50% up and 50% down. But the process is preferential, and so what it does is it eventually aligns the overall spins, and the spin will have a net. You have two, one spin up and one spin down, rotating at the same speed together. If you blur your eyes or add them together, you get a single magnet. That's exactly what it is, spinning at the Lamour frequency at 90 degrees to the axis, or in the XY plane, if you had Z is the axis up the spine or up through the solenoid that you're doing. And this spinning thing, if the entire array spins at the same rate, that will radiate light out. And so what happens is that you have this saturation process, so it very quickly saturates, and then a little more intense radiation aligns the population, statistical population of spins, such that they perform a virtual state, that is combined of two states, and it will dephase. These things will lose phase for sort of two sets of reasons. One is there'll be spin-spin interaction, and that means the actual individual areas will get out of phase, and then there'll be spin lattice vibration, and that's where thermal energy is transmitted by the lattice, which is actually, you're not a lattice, you're not a crystal, but by the surrounding material, it will transfer and even out your reduce the population back to the thermal level, and you won't see it. So there are two effects that your spinning antenna will blur out and reduce in size, T1, T2, as opposed to those two things. Now there's two, it's a hard one, there's two detection mechanisms. You can excite your body, the actual parts of your body, the correct things, and excite it with you excite it with a pulse, and it will ring for a very short time after, just a millisecond or a microsecond afterwards, and it will ring. That's free induction decay, FID. So when you first put the pulse in, so you have your excitation pulse, TR. So there's a couple of T's. There's T for the length of excitation pulses, and there's also T1, T2 is the decay rates. Now, the very early MRI machines would look for you
you would excite it and actually produce a decay afterwards. And what would happen is that you would pump the field, turn off your exciting radio pulse, radio antenna, and you then, with that same radio antenna, pick up a slight resonant decay. So the resonance is in the population of spinning protons and neutrons, spinning oscillators. And so the resonance is not the actual oscillators themselves, but it is the statistical correlation of the oscillators as such. So you create a population of oscillators, and when the population is perfectly aligned, and that is 50-50, and because it doesn't go to 50-50 as temperature goes, it decays down, and is in phase. And so your process actually creates an in-phaseness here. So that's all very good, so you can measure that. But what we do is we have a second pulse, the TE, TR and TE, which is a 180 degrees pulse. So if you can imagine, you set all your little pairs of protons off in the same area, and they're spinning at the same rate, and the next, a little while later, there's just a few molecules away, there's another pair which spin around. And it's a slightly different magnetic field. A slightly different magnetic field means it's a slightly different frequency. And so it's in almost the same frequency, but over a few thousands of oscillations, they'll go out of phase. And so it's like a running race. Some will go out of phase quickly, some will go out of phase slowly. So it's like you fire the gun and you all set off at the marathon. And as you run, the crowd runs, you get them all over the place, and you're trying to detect them as a single body, but you're now spread out. So this TE pulse does the following thing. It picks up the slowest runner and puts them up the front, and puts the fastest runner down the back, and then lets them continue to run. And magically, at a certain distance, time distance, the same time after, you'll have an echo pulse. So MRIs are echo machines. And so what happens is you put the TE repulse in, and you'll see an echo effect. And so you'll go, flip, boom. It's a slight echo, and you look at the strength of that echo, and that particular echo has a whole heap of properties. It's easier to measure, and what happens now is that they keep on echoing it, putting echo after echo, and for the same excitation pulse, harvest that echo pulse many, many times over. Now, depending on how you excite it, if you have a long excitation time and a long echo pulse, you're very good at lining everything up and reordering it. So you get a very strong T2. But if you T2 pulse, which is the dephasing pulse, the time to dephasing, but if you do the opposite, you have a very short excitation pulse and a very short echo pulse, you will pick up more the actual natural thermal decay of your pulse. So you'll get T1 and T2 to go in them. Now, I must admit, I've understood this a little bit more. So there are three things that you can pick up from a scan. Firstly, you can pick up the size of your pulse, and your size of your pulse is due to the PD, or proton density. And then you can pick up further information, which allows you to colour or reduce or add contrast to your image. Computer add contrast. And this is picking up a very subtle effects of T1, which is the lattice decay, or T2, the spin-spin decay. Now, depending on what type of substance it is, if it's in a uniform molecule like water, you're not going to have very much spin-spin decay. T2 won't be very big, but if it's in fat, you'll get T2 comparatively big to T1. So T1 and T2 can distinguish between fat and water, depending on how you do it in. But there's a very set of subtle things, and the computers actually go back and moderate the intensity of your proton intensity such that it's moderated with the T1, T2 two signals. And that's just not the half of it. There's about 10 varieties of things that you can do now, and there's fast multi-photon, multi-echo decay. So the resonance entire thing is that the resonance is of your flesh. Your flesh is made to resonate. And so that a resonance means, if something's resonant, it means it's storing energy like a bell. But what happens is that the bell decays, and then you time reverse it, and then the process of decay reverses itself. Well, it's time reversed, and then it goes forward in the same direction and comes out for an echo. So it's a resonance, but a reconstructed resonance for an echo. So that's how a MRI machine operates. And now, as promised, we'll go through the two formula here. Now, the two formula are not really relevant to this, so I'm just going to read them very quickly. Z, the acoustic impedance of a body part, is rho, the density, times V, the speed. Speed it up. So you'll say, what is physically cut out a piece of flesh? And you'll measure the time it takes the pulse to go through it, and you'll also measure the speed, sorry, the density, how much put it in water. And then there's a second equation, is IR over I0, incident equals, that ratio equals the ratio of the difference of impedance squared over the sum of the impedance squared. So that's a funny sort of formula, because it actually refers to incident 90 degrees to an interface. But in general, it says that you'll get more reflection off a change in density. But that no longer, even though this is really taught, that's no longer the case in terms that we look at the inhomogeneity producing a very low level pulse. And so a particular type of material will produce a background echo round, and so that's what we then therefore colour it. So we actually just, although that's an important point, it doesn't really explain the background echo that you have. And I suppose I only really picked that up from using that in optical time delay stuff for looking at optical fibre faults, just to see what's going on. You can see the different types of fibre would just send back reflected, a bit of back reflection. It depends how it is. Okay, we're getting back there to the formulas. Here's the full questions. Question C, describe how the structure of an endoscope enables it to be used to detect the presence of a tumour in the stomach wall and to collect tissue samples for analysis. Okay, so using the fundamental technique of having the information in your head from that lecture and knowing that you can use the formulas if you require it, we have to do this, and this is reverse order. Now, the thing is that you have to describe the structure. So I'll read that again. Describe how the structure of an endoscope enables it to be used to detect the presence of a tumour in the stomach wall and to collect a tissue sample for analysis. So it's not the benefit, but the thing. So doing in full reverse, collection of a tissue sample for analysis is enabled by having the ability of the endoscope to actually cut and harvest a sample and withdraw it out for later analysis. That's how it's enabled. The description of how it does that, can you see I'm doing the reverse
So reading it, the description of how it does it is that it has a, you can see what's going on. You have remote control scissors and tweezers, which can be operated by wires which go down a tube collinear with the actual optics of the endoscope, and then they can be maneuvered while watching it, picked up and placed into a pair of tweezers, a little clamp, which can be withdrawn from the patient. The detection of presence of a tumour in the stomach wall is enabled by looking at the image and the nature of the tumour through the endoscope. That's enabled by the description of how it's done is that light is sent up incoherent fiber optic light pipes by the process of internal reflection. I think that's enough there. And that orientation optimizes the light to illuminate the tumour, therefore illuminating the overall tumour for analysis. That tumour then reflects the light through a prism, through a lens onto an ordered fibre optic array, which translates that image geometrically up through the endoscope through an array of coherent optical fibres onto a camera. And so the surgeon can identify it for process A above. Okay, that's my answer. And we're going to go to C. Just reading the answer. This is the gig, everyone. For 4 marks, describe how the structure of an endoscope enables it to detect the presence of a tumour and collect a tissue sample. So I would actually say, here's the sample. This is the sample answer, but you've got to actually then nail what the structure is. The endoscope is an instrument that carries light and small instruments inside the body while conveying images back to the operator. It consists of a bundle of optical fibres to carry light to the tissue, a coherent bundle of optical fibres to carry an image of the tissue, e.g. tumour, to the operator, a lens at either end of the bundle to focus the image or connect to a recording device, control lines to manipulate the position in the patient, miniature remotely controlled surgical tools to obtain a tissue sample, e.g. a tumour biopsy. So they did it. I did it more extensively for 4 marks. Okay, here's the second question. So you get the general general gist of the question, a lecture, the formula sheet, the question in detail where I have a go. How, question D, part one, how does a magnetic resonance image, MRI scan, distinguish between grey and white matter in the brain? Okay. So, to reverse for 2 marks. grey and white matter on the image are indicated by different intensities drawn on the image, which are painted by the weighting of image of analysis of the individual pixels, the T1 and T2 for the individual pixels, which are resonant decay features. T1 is the lattice spin. T2 is the spin lattice ones. T2 is not affected by water as much, so you can get the actual water fat ratio and therefore detect the difference between the amount of moisture and fat component of those structures in the brain. I've just deliberately avoided there not to add too much information to it. And the answer is, differences in the T1, T2 relaxation times are dependent on the water content of different tissues. Because the water content of white and grey matter in the brain is different, relaxation time data of the tissues can be analysed to produce images that clearly show the location of different types of image. Okay, that's a reasonable, that was close, but okay. Next question is, how is the process of resonance used in the production of an MRI scan? Okay, so I know in advance that very few people or teachers have actually understand the actual resonant process. So I'm going to give you the correct answer. So resonance is generated by collecting a by tuning a population of protons or nuclei with a spin. It's created in two steps. One, there's the population of a spin down is made equal to the population of spin up, creating a net spin vector which rotates at 90 degrees. That's phase one. Phase two, phase two, this process is repeated such that all the spins in a local area of tissue orient. This can be then measured the decay, the phase decay, which is a spin, or the actual total orientation or relative population can be scanned by T1, T2, by free induction decay, or a special time reversing echo pulse can be put in, so a second pulse can be put in, and that time reverses the spin dephasing, which re-emerges as an echo, and that process there can detect the proton density, and estimate T1 and T2 from different aspects of that spin. I really think you have to, if you want to go T1, T2, you have to actually do different excitation pulses. So that's how the process of resonance. Okay. This sample describes the process of resonance is used in production of MRI scan. The sample thing is when two objects have the same natural frequency, energy can be efficiently transferred between them. The process for resonance. Now you can have a single object which has a resonance and you can actually do that frequency. So that's what I should have said, is a lot more frequency. Okay. To produce an MRI scan, a very strong magnetic field, I left that out, a strong magnetic field supplies and causes the photon in the body to align with the field and process at a particular frequency. No, they're already processing at the Lamoore frequency, and the process calls the population above and against the field. I really mucked up this answer by leaving out some basic stuff. I think I would have been canned for this one. A radio pulse at the same frequency is then applied, causing the protons to resonate. Effectively absorbing the energy of the pulse and locking them in phase with one another. Well, it is important that there's equal up and equal down, and they are in phase. Changes in the net magnetic field produced by the protons when the RF pulse stops are measured, and the data are analyzed to produce the MRI magnetic resonance image. Okay, there's some information in there. This is actually quite a difficult concept to get across. There's not the understanding of the echo pulse and the fact that equal populations above and below create a net pulse equal to it. So this is a fundamental problem dealing with this type of thing, is that the actual reality is saving lives, but it doesn't suit a sort of a mass market high school production. That is, you get the information fit for teachers of a certain level to all produce it and produce it right uniformly across the state. So if you had a different system where professionals got together and taught specifically this in a unit which covered all the state, I think you'd have a better chance of getting it all right. Thanks for listening. This is Peter Hill Explains.